leading is complex, and I don't think there's one answer to shift it this way or shift it that way. You're just going to always be trying to improve your leadership and be authentic about who you are. Don't try to be some perfect leader.
Right.
Find the right leadership position for you, for the right team, doing the right work that fits who you are. That's important.
Hello and welcome to 20 Minute Health Talk. I'm Sandra Lindsay. On today's episode, you'll hear my conversation with author Laura Freeburn Smith, a partner and co-founder of Organizational Performance Group, or OPG for short. This group specializes in helping leaders reach their full potential, as well as that of their organizations. And they do it using what our guest calls the Abundance Leadership Model. Not only a game changer in the boardroom, Laura explains how it can be used in your everyday life and even personal relationships. In 2023, she put pen to paper and published a book on the topic called Abundance Leaders: Creating Energy, Joy, and Productivity in an Unsettled World. Prior to OPG, Laura served as director of Yale's Organizational Development and Learning Center, which she helped create. She has also consulted for the New York Times, Lehman Foundation, and ESPN. I recently caught up with Laura to discuss her new book, what she hopes leaders take from it, and how these lessons can be applied outside of the professional setting. First of all, thank you so much for joining us here today. A few months ago, I attended a retreat where you facilitated. That was the first time I met you, and I was so fascinated with your work. Even before hearing about the book and reading the book, I was so fascinated with your presentation there, hence why you're here with me as my guest today. Let's get into it. So, Abundance Leaders, Creating Energy, Joy, and Productivity in an Unsettled World. So, who are Abundance Leaders?
Abundance leaders are leaders who operate from a particular mindset, a way that they interpret the world and the things that are happening in the world. At the core of an abundance mindset is optimism. It's one of the critical psychological attributes of an abundance leader. So abundance leaders are people who, operating from a mindset of optimism, look at problems, challenges, organizational issues as fundamentally interesting and solvable. They also tend to think of power as shareable. They tend to be people who think about making the world better through their work and through their organizations.
So this definition, what you just explained, sounds a little bit like what we would call in nursing a transformational leader. Does that sound familiar to you? Would you agree?
Yeah, let me take a step back for a minute. And I want to talk about the different leadership theories that are out in the world. And back 50, 70 years ago, there was the beginning of a real focus on studying leaders. Oddly enough, leadership wasn't studied in a theoretical research way until the 40s in World War II. And out of that came a theory of leadership called transactional, where if I give you money, you're going to do this. What followed after that was the transformational leadership model, which is the more charismatic leader, the purpose-driven, the visionary leader. Most leadership models now are a blend of multiple different kinds of leadership models. There's another one called situational leadership. You adapt your leadership to whatever situation you're in.
Right.
And then abundance leadership takes into account all of that. You can be transformational and somewhat transactional and situational and be an abundance leader. And actually, a good abundance leader would adjust their leadership. Sometimes a scarcity behavior is the right behavior. Not frequently.
So let's talk about that scarcity mindset.
Scarcity behaviors and mindsets usually arise out of some kind of fear, lack of resources, loss of power, or sometimes it's not having a skill set to be an abundance leader. So we can teach people how to be more abundance oriented. So scarcity behaviors look like hoarding information is one that comes up in the model. One is not being visible to staff. The leader who goes into their office and you never see them, who the staff say, I haven't seen them in 2 months. You know, they never walk around.
Right.
A scarcity leader is the type who doesn't argue for resources for their staff. They throw people under the bus publicly. They blame others. And we all do things that hurt people as leaders. We don't intend to, but we really good leaders are paying attention to what they say and do and the decisions they make and trying to manage the negative impact. They also tend to not always be as aware of what we call their affect. So they'll the way we come off, that's what your affect is, how we look to others. Abundance leaders tend to be aware of how they appear to others, and scarcity leaders less so. So full-on scarcity behavior, unmitigated, unmoderated, unaware, there's never really a great moment for that.
Should never show up.
Should never show up. Now, you might have a moment when you're leading where you have to do budget cuts. You have to let people go. That is not necessarily a scarcity behavior. That's making good decisions in relation to scarce resources. So I would say scarcity behaviors for no reason are not okay. Scarcity behaviors for good reasons that you can articulate are okay. There's a little nuance in there.
How does having an abundance leader, how does that translate to a healthy work environment, say, for our staff?
Yeah. I think we can tie it, I know we can, to not only a healthy work environment, we can also tie it to individual health. So okay. Let me start with the individual health. Mm-hmm. And I know there are wonderful Northwell physicians who might be listening to this who can weigh in on this. But optimism in general is the kind of energy that allows you to have better health overall because you see the possibilities in the future. Optimists tend to be more proactive. They tend to look for solutions to problems. So if you know that characterologically you tend to be a little more on the pessimist side, or maybe you're a little more negative, there's some verbal habits you can acquire that are going to help pivot you towards more self-empowerment, more agency in your life that can help you with some of the things that contribute to better health. Exercise, for example, diet, cooking, and those things. Those verbal habits are just the tape that we have in our head about the world. So let me give an example. A car cuts you off in traffic. What's a person's reaction? Not yours, Sandra. What might a person respond to somebody cutting you off?
You could be irate.
You could be irate.
They have a few choice words for that person.
Set you off. Now, what's happened physically? I'm not a physician, but I would say the physicians would say that your heart rate would go up.
Heart rate goes up.
You know, your blood pressure, the agitation level, all those stress indicators are going up. So one of the things we can do when a car cuts in front of us is we can mentally construct a different scenario of what's happening in that car.
Yeah.
So what I say is, maybe there's somebody in that car who's about to give birth and they got to get to the hospital. Maybe they're having an emergency. Just so that we change that frame of how we're interacting with the world.
I'm connecting now the abundance leadership with that mindset. The mindset.
Yeah. Well, I'll say one other thing about individual health, and then I'll talk about workplace cultures and abundance, which was the second part of your question. Now, often we are surrounded by others who are negative. Look how gorgeous it is out today, I might say. Now, what's a negative person say?
What's so gorgeous about it? It's cloudy. It's rainy.
It's going to rain tomorrow. Sucks. Right. They just take the wind out of your sails.
Yes.
Most people have someone in their life that does this or someone at work. So I encourage people to really be careful about how much time you spend with someone whose constant refrain is changing the positive to a negative or always saying why something won't work. Well, let me answer the question about workplace cultures, because we spend a huge amount of our awake time at work. I believe it's the greatest percentage of our week is spent at work, our awake time versus in bed. And I hope everybody's getting a good night's sleep on this who's listening. That means that our workplace culture greatly influences our health.
Absolutely. Yeah.
If we feel disempowered, we have no voice. If we feel unrecognized, if we feel we don't have the right tools, if we feel we're not getting feedback, positive or negative, we're just being ignored, all these things contribute to a feeling of not achieving a life purpose, not actualizing our full potential. So a good leader, a good manager, a good workplace culture does the opposite of all of those things. There's good performance reviews. There's team building. There are staff meetings. Information is shared regularly. So I do know that Northwell Health regularly wins a great place to work stamp.
Yes.
So this is one, you know, if the staff are out there listening, the personnel, medical personnel and others, Northwell is a place that really works on its culture quite a bit. That alone is going to improve health. Coming to work purpose-driven, happy, and feeling like you are in a place where you can change things. It may not be perfect.
Right.
But that you can find a way to change things.
Well, that's why I will be celebrating my 30th year at Northwell.
It's incredible.
And still enjoy coming to work.
One other tip that might help with those difficult conversations. Well, two tips. One is try to avoid what's called a judging mind and go into learning mind. Tony, my business partner, writes a lot about that. So you want to suspend judgment and go to learning. How do you go into learning mind? You ask questions. So try this at the next party you're at. This is a very cool thing to try at a party, and then you can start applying it at work. You meet somebody at a party, you don't know them. Usually, you know, what do we ask of somebody? Where do you work? Or usually we ask, where do you work or where do you live?
What do you do for a living?
Force yourself to ask five questions in a row of that person. So they're going to answer your first question, come up with another question, ask that. Ask five questions. Watch what happens to the conversation. It gets deep. They feel heard. You learn a huge amount. I did this at a family gathering a few months ago, and my nephew, Jonah, who is in his 20s, was standing next to me. And I remember he was watching me do this with someone. I didn't say I was doing it, but he said, "Well, that's really cool. You just asked a ton of questions." I said, "Yeah, because I'm curious about this person and how they got interested in opera. And I don't particularly like opera, but I want to know how you get turned on to it." So I really encourage listeners, just try this little technique at the next dinner you're at. Ask five questions. Yeah.
I hope for our audience that's listening, you know, they can get a good idea of what an abundance leader is and hold their leaders accountable. Because this is what I want from my leader.
Yeah.
This is how I want to show up at work. This is how I want to feel. And since you're my leader, this is what I expect from you.
Yeah. In the book, I outline all the different behaviors. And that's language people can use with their leaders, their managers, with themselves, and even with colleagues. And one part of the book has a how-to manual. Because it's great to have a good theory,
right?
But if you don't know what to do. So in that how-to manual are tips and techniques that even staff members can bring to their bosses and say, could we try this as well?
What are some of those behaviors?
So things...
What are some of those how-to?
Yeah, so I'll just give you some random examples. At OPG, my organization, we have in our office, we have an outside of work wall where people post pictures of things they do outside of work.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And so people walk by and go, "Oh, look at this person's out horseback riding," or "Look at their kids. This is so cool." People can put up any picture, of course, appropriate to the workplace.
Of course.
And they can take down pictures. We have people who've left the organization. Their pictures are still up there. It's a way of honoring our past as well. So just little things like that. We call these micro levers or micro behaviors that signal you're a different kind of leader. I think all these behaviors that we're talking about, many of these personal, individualized ones, there's nothing groundbreaking about it. It's getting the habit, finding that one thing that changes what you keep doing over and over and over and making things better. I think what's groundbreaking about the book is that underlying mentality of the abundance mindset. And that's the deeper work, that all these behaviors help you start to have a more abundance mindset, that then it helps you in all those other places in your life. We talk a lot at the program about parenting and marriages and partnerships. How do these behaviors make your marriage better, your partnership better?
How does it make your marriage, your relationships with your children better?
So one of the behaviors I talk about in the book, and this comes from Oprah Winfrey, who is, I think, brilliant. As you may know, she has a genius level IQ.
Yes.
And she's incredible.
Just yes, she is.
She's an abundance leader. She's a walking personification of an abundance leader. She said, an article in one of her magazines, I'm not sure it was her, but I think it might have been one of her editorial pieces in one of her magazines. She said, there's two fatal flaws that professionals make, mistakes they make all the time. They mind read and they fortune tell. Mm-hmm. So we mind read, we assume what somebody's thinking. We go, oh, I know how they feel. I know what they're going to say, et cetera. And fortune telling is predicting what will happen. Well, if you do that, then that's going to happen. Well, she's going to. I know she's going to. These two behaviors are also incredibly detrimental to a marriage or to any relationship, including with children. So how do we not mind read and how do we not fortune tell? So first you have to recognize for mind reading, as soon as you start to say, well, I bet they feel this. Well, I know what she was thinking. You know you're mind reading. You have to say, stop. Let me ask. How are you feeling? You seem unsettled, but I'm wondering what you're feeling. Can you tell me more about what happened? Can you tell me more about what you hope for? You see the switch in the questions.
Mm-hmm.
Fortune telling is to not assume what's going to happen. So notice when you start to predict the future and you make your decisions based on a future prediction that you don't actually know is going to happen. Well, I'm not going to go to that party because so-and-so is coming and it's going to be a terrible party. Well, how do you know? Why don't you go try it? So this opens up your world to be more open to different possibilities. I don't know if you'd like me to, I can go into the five rules of life as well.
Yeah, let's do it.
So the five rules of life, which are also in the book, and they help you not mind read and not fortune tell. You want to think about which of these five rules at this given moment on this day do I need to pay attention to? Because at any given moment, one of these five rules is our challenge in any situation. So the first one is to show up. That's the first rule of life, show up. Be where you're supposed to be. Show up for yourself, for others, et cetera. Second rule is be present.
Mm-hmm. Hard to do these days with so many distractions.
And notice the difference. Most people assume showing up is being present. Mm-hmm. They're not the same. Be present means you don't come in with a hangover. You don't come in late. You don't come in distracted. You come in here. You turn off your phone. You're ready to go. Right. Third rule is speak your truth. And that takes a lifetime to learn how to do in a kind, productive way. Speak your truth, not in an aggressive, not in a detrimental way, at the right time, in the right way, so it improves your relationships. The fourth rule is don't be attached to an outcome. Very hard. We want things to be turn out a certain way. And the fifth is be open to all possibilities. So really beautiful rules. And when you can enact each of those, all of your relationships get healthier.
Wow. And this can be all of these, the rules that you just mentioned can be applied to a person.
To a
so
team.
Any of our listeners, and in a workplace.
Absolutely.
Right.
To a whole team. Those can be the guidelines for the whole team.
So my final question to you, Laura, do you think effective leadership then is a matter of adjusting your mental model to fit your personality, or rather adjusting your personality to fit the desired mental model?
Yes. I think leading is one of the most difficult things people do. It is really.
But I have a passion for leadership. I love leadership.
You are in
I
the 10%.
People.
Only about 10% of the population feels that way. Really just love it, can't want to do more of it.
My brother thinks I'm crazy.
Yeah, most people would say you're crazy because, managing people is like herding cats sometimes. And you get a lot of criticism and you're really trying to help people solve problems. So I think the first question leaders should ask is, do I want to keep doing it? Someone like you says, absolutely. It gives me meaning and purpose and I love it. Others often choose to do it because it's a promotion and there's a paycheck that comes with it and more influence, but they're pretty miserable leading. I always encourage those clients to think about going onto some other trajectory. So leading is complex, and I don't think there's one answer to shift it this way or shift it that way. You're just going to always be trying to improve your leadership. And be authentic about who you are. Don't try to be some perfect leader.
Right.
Find the right leadership position for you, for the right team doing the right work that fits who you are. That's important.
Where you can show up, be present, and be your authentic self.
Exactly. My work here is done, Sandra.
Drop the mic. I agree with that wholeheartedly. That does it for this episode. I really enjoyed talking to Laura about a topic that I am so passionate about. I have learned so much and hope that you have as well. Remember, you can lead from any seat. At home, among your friends, any organization that you're involved in, and also you can lead in your workplace, whether you have a formal or an informal position of leadership. And I highly recommend that you check out her book, Abundance Leaders. It's a great resource for anyone who's interested in leadership or organizational culture. Until next time, I'm Sandra Lindsay, and this has been another episode of 20 Minute Health Talk.